message now and make it as though it was custom made just for us. You speak each heart individually. Lord, just like when we paint a wall, the paint seems to seep in every little place, and some are a little deeper than others. If it's a little notch or a hole, that paint goes deep, and others it might just seem like it's on the surface. Lord Jesus, you've got to fill in all the gaps and the holes in us today. May your word just go deep when it needs to and where it needs to really reach down to us. And Jesus, I pray that you would just paint us fresh in you today. Give us that grace that we need for the moment. So Lord, now you speak to us through your word. Make it real, make it come alive, and make it speak to us in Jesus' name. Amen. You need a Bible, we have one right up here for you. You can I am excited. Good morning to y'all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. It's so neat to see you. If you have an inkling to join us for our Wednesday night Bible study, I've got some sheets right here that go along with the Harbinger book. But if you want to come out, it's exciting. It's about the future, about prophecy and some of the events of 9/11 and how they seem to be some of the things that Israel went through years ago, or much to what the United States seems to be going through today. So we can do some comparison in that study. But please come out and join us on Wednesday night. God's at work. Hope he is in your life as well, that you can not help but sing. Our current series is this, Bible Promises to Live By. Bible Promises to Live By. If you have seen God work in your life and you say, consider this great promise God has given to us. This is one of my favorite. It says this, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Has anybody ever heard that promise before? I promise I'll never leave you. We'd love to hear that all the time from folks around us. Couples would probably love to hear that because they sometimes think, am I not going to have my mate one day? Whether that be divorce, death, or whatever, it's like, well, I thought you'd always be here. And sometimes we compare that to men or mankind. We get a little discouraged and we sort of think, but God, can you really hold true on that promise? I heard this said when I was a little kid, or maybe younger. The guy said something like this, God said it, I believe it, and that settles it. And the man says, I got something better than that. I think, how could he be better than that? He said, God said it, and that settles it, whether you believe it or not. And I thought, yeah, that would be better. Here's what God said, I'll never leave you. I won't divorce you, I won't walk out on you, I won't abandon you. Well, how come God... I don't sense him so much. Well, people in the Old Testament hadn't met Jesus yet. And in Deuteronomy 31:6, be strong and of good courage. Do not fear, do not, nor be afraid of them. For the Lord your God, he is the one who goes with you. He will not leave you nor forsake you. That's the Old Testament verse that matches our Hebrews verse. He said, but I still, Hebrews 13:5, I will never leave you nor forsake you. I don't know if I can believe that. Remember now, don't call God a what? Liar. He's not a liar. Matter of fact, Jesus says in John 14:6, I am the way, the truth, and the life. If I said it, you can bank on that. But God, so-and-so's let me down. You know what God and Jesus would say to that? In a nice sort of not being rude or ugly to you. Well, so-and-so let me down. You know what Jesus would say? I'm not so-and-so. I'm Jesus. I'm the Son of God. I will never leave you nor forsake you. If you just let that soak in, it's almost like me and God make a majority. I like that. I don't have to worry about Jesus walking out on me or leaving me or firing me. Or do y'all ever have bad days? You mean, do I ever get mad at Jesus? Raise your hand if you've ever been mad at God. See there, you're not. About everybody's hand goes up. Yeah. I heard missionary Kerry Clifton in China one time. Kerry says, if you're mad at God, go ahead and tell him because he knows anyway. So God won't tell them. Me and God, we're friends. We just not on speaking terms right now. I saw a bumper sticker that says, if you don't feel close to God anymore, it wasn't him that moved. Ouch. See, God just stays right here. You just drift off. God don't feel God. Wonder why. So let's take the earplugs out today and hear his message loud and clear. And his message is this, I'll never leave you nor forsake you. But you know, that was that one time. I was going through this, and I just didn't feel God around me. We've all probably asked this question, God, where are you? And maybe you need to be reminded of that right there when you don't sense Him. One night a man had a dream. He dreamed he was walking along the beach with the Lord. Across the sky flashed scenes from his life, and for each scene he noticed two sets of footprints in the sand. One belonged to him, the other to the Lord, and when the last scene of his life flashed before him, he looked back at the footprints in the sand. He noticed that many times along the path of his life there was only one set of footprints. He also noticed that it happened at the very lowest and saddest times in his life. This really bothered him. He questioned the Lord about it. Lord, you said that once I decided to follow you, you'd walk with me all the way. But I've noticed that during the most troublesome times in my life, there's only one set of footprints. I don't understand why, when I needed you the most, you would leave me. He must not have learned that promise, I'll never leave you nor forsake you. The Lord replied, oh, my precious, precious child, I love you, and I never leave you. During your times of trial and suffering, when you see only one set of footprints, it was then that I carried you. Jesus. Grabs my heart a little bit there because he's carried me before. Just think of Jesus putting you on his back and saying, we're going to get through this. Let's go. Oh, but Jesus, let me down. No, I've got you. Because I will never leave you what? Say this. I'll never leave you nor what? Forsake you. And he said it. We need to believe it. Anybody been carried by Jesus? Grabs my heart. Goes out over where you were. Probably in a hospital room. Probably at a funeral home. And saying, God, if you don't do something, I'm not going to make it through here. And God says, come here. I get heavy, don't I? Nah. He probably said that line from that rock some years ago. You know what Jesus would say to me? You ain't heavy. You're my brother. Because you see, I become God's son too. When I get into the family of God, He makes me His child. So Jesus and I are brothers. So I'm not heavy. Matter of fact, I'm sitting on His back and I'm thinking, wow, this will all be good. I look over and Joe, you're there beside me. What are you doing? He's carrying us all. Oh, it's so tough. That's a beautiful vacation spot, isn't it? You'd think, well, can I just go there? And what's that got to do with being a low time in my life? Well, let me show you from that direction. You say, well, that is such a beautiful spot. Let me take a vacation here. Next time you want to go to the beach, perhaps we could pull up at this little body of water. And as you look closer, maybe you can even see this. Oh, it really looks like a beach now. Is that sand? Yes, it's sand. And if you look a little closer, it's made up of some other things too. So thick and dense. Some of y'all's feet are black like this man right there before you get in the water. But that's because at the bottom of this body of water, there's some things that ooze up. And it's almost like what we'd coat a road with. What do you want to call that stuff? Tar. It's almost like asphalt. It oozes up in the bottom of this, and it'll come up to it, and it makes the water a different color. And if you walk on the bottom there, you can actually pick up, and your feet look black. The water is so dense, this man's not sitting in a chair right there. He's not on a life raft. He's in the water. Well, what's this water look like? It looks like that. If you don't recognize that, that's salt crystals and tar. So that beautiful area right there, I'd like to be there. Well, one time there was someone we read about in the Bible who stayed in a cave right back here. He is at the top corner there. He's in that cave. I just approximate. But there are caves surrounding this area. As a matter of fact, back in around the 1940s, when Israel became a nation again in 1948, they found some Dead Sea Scrolls in a cave that sort of proves the Bible right. Well, we believe in the Bible anyway. We didn't need them to find the Dead Sea Scrolls, but it's cool when they... Well, back in one of these caves a long time ago, a man stayed for a while. Where is this place? Well, The Dead Sea, that's what it is. The Dead Sea. It's dying daily, drop by drop, at a rate of 3 feet per year. People think, well, it's soon just going to be gone. At 3 feet per year, it's been called by some a saline cemetery. Not much life is found in this sea. It's so thick and dense that you can float in it without the use of a life raft. Well, who in the world would live at this? Because it's the lowest point on Earth. If you've been up Catawba Mountain, that's 2,000 feet. If you've been up Mount Rogers in Marion, Virginia, anybody been to Mount Rogers before? Down in Marion Henry, I used to be there, and then go up to Hungry Mother State Park. Mount Rogers is down there, it's around 5,780-some feet. So Catawba Mountain's 2,000, Mount Rogers is roughly three times Catawba, that's 6,000 feet. Well, this is about 1,500 feet below sea level. So at this point, you'd have to go up 1,500 feet just to get to normal level, and then you go another 2,000 so to reach the top of Catawba Mountain. So this is the lowest point on Earth. And don't you think it's sort of odd that that man that lived in the cave was close to the low point? So let's take a look today at somebody who made this dry, salty, acidic, hardly no life place his home for a while. It seems almost fitting that he would finally end up in this place. At the lowest point in his life, he's at the lowest place on the earth. God's got a sense of humor, I guess. Let me put you in a low place. Here is the Giles football team in 1972. That's a bunch of strong, valiant men. King David is in the front there. He's surrounded by David's mighty men. Even when David took off and was running from Saul, some men came along beside him. Because you fill in this blank. Because just when we think we're all by ourselves, we'll realize what? We're not alone. We're not alone. David wasn't really alone. We're going to talk about David today. Let's turn in your Bibles to 1 Samuel 19. God's going to make good on his promise here that I'll never leave you nor forsake you. 1 Samuel 19. We know about the birth of Samuel, and Samuel grew up. He was one of those judges, or some people count him as a judge. He anointed Saul as king. That didn't work out so well, so Saul ended up not being a king, and this man named David took over for him. And Saul got so jealous that he was being replaced that in 1 Samuel chapter 19, something happens. 1 Samuel 19, let's read 1 through 10. Saul told his son Jonathan and all the attendants to kill David. That's a way to get rid of an enemy. But Jonathan was very fond of David and warned him. Jonathan and David were like best friends. Let me pause right there and just make sure you know this. Jonathan and David, they were great friends. There wasn't any, nothing wrong with that. It wasn't like, oh, did they like each other in strength? Was that homosexuality? No, no. I tell you what, one of my most fond memories, I get emotional again, but I was a little kid, growing up this much. It'd be 11 to 7, and Daddy would get ready to leave, and he would come over. He had Old Spice, I can still smell it, Vitalis on his hair, Vitalis and Old Spice, and Daddy would, all right, take care of Mama. He'd go down and, come back on the steps outside, because I'd run down the seam and just tell my Daddy. Wow. Daddy would kiss me on the cheek. Ever had your Daddy kiss you? Wow, breaks your heart. Daddy, I give him a kiss. All right. Smell Vitalis and Old Spice. Daddy was my friend. He's my daddy. He'd whip me, but as we grew older and older, I appreciated Daddy. Well, Jonathan and David actually did that. They'd kiss one another and go, why? Because they were so tight. Jonathan said, David, my dad's trying to kill you. He's a crazy man. I don't know what's wrong. He's just, but I don't want you to die. John was very fond of David, so he warned him. My father Saul is looking for a chance to kill you. Be on your guard tomorrow morning. Go into the hiding and stay there. I'll go out and stand with my father in the field where you are. I'll speak to him about you, and I'll tell you what to find out. He wasn't jealous. By the way, what would David soon become? He becomes king. Well, John didn't get mad and said, that's my job. Have you taken my spot? He didn't do that. He said, man, more power to you. You go right ahead. You're the man. Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, let not the king do wrong to his servant David. He has not wronged you. And what he has done has benefited you greatly. What had he done? He'd killed the enemy soldiers so often. He took care of the nation of Israel. He made Saul look good. He took his life in his own hands when he killed the Philistine. By the way, who was that Philistine that he killed? Goliath. The Lord won a great victory for all Israel, and you saw it, and we're glad. Why then would you do wrong to this innocent man like David by killing him for no reason? By the way, why did Saul want to kill him? Because of the green-eyed monster. Jealous. You make me look bad. They were singing a song when they come back from battle. Saul was all, you know, yeah, big buff. He was grand. The people said, Saul has killed his thousands. And Saul was, yeah. David has killed his 10,000s. Oh, what's the deal there? David's getting more what? Recognition, attention than I am. Pull out the paper. David, again, went, didn't like that. Let's just kill him. You're going to kill your own ally? Jonathan warns him. Saul listened to Jonathan, took his oath. As surely as the Lord lives, David will not be put to death. See how long this lasts. Jonathan called David and told him the whole conversation. He brought him to Saul, and David was with Saul as before. Once more war broke out, and David went out and fought the Philistines. He struck them with such force that they fled before him. Evil spirit came from the Lord came upon Saul as he was sitting in his house with a spear in his hand. When David was playing the harp, Saul tried to pin him to the wall with the spear, but David eluded him as Saul drove the spear into the wall. That night, David made good his escape. Okay, here we go then. David almost loses his life. He takes off on the run now in 1917. If you keep reading right down through here, David leaves. Saul sent men to David's house to watch and kill him in the morning. But Michal, David's wife, warned him. By the way, Michal was Saul's daughter. So, if you don't run for your life tonight, tomorrow you'll be killed. So Michal let David down through a window and he fled and escaped. So now he's a man on the run. There's a show when I was a little kid in the mountain 1960s, David Jansen. What was the name of that show? Is anybody old as I am? It was called the... Although he was on the run. David Jansen. He was looking for the one-armed man that killed his wife, and nobody ever believed his story of the one-armed man that killed his wife, so they thought he killed his wife. What was that called?
The Fugitive.
The Fugitive. And he was constantly being hunted down. Every town could find a little two-bit job enough to survive, but then he had to leave because David's the fugitive now. He is a man on the run. Michal, his wife, lets him down through a window. He flees, he escapes. Michal took an idol, laid it on the bed, covering it up with the garment, even put some goat's hair on the top. They came in the next morning to kill David, pull back the cover. Oh, my Lanta, right there it is before him, big old idol with hair on the top. You fooled us. And Michal, David's wife, says, well, here's what he did. Verse 17. Saul said to Michal, why did you deceive me like this and send my enemy away so that he has escaped? Michal told him, well, he said to me, let me get away. Why should I kill you? In other words, if you don't help me escape, I'll kill you. Did David say that to her? No. Well, that was a good trust factor. He said, well, Michael just saved your life. I don't know that things were ever the same after that, though. Michael, why didn't you say you're hunting up an innocent man? Didn't say that. So David loses his life almost. Now David loses his wife. So what does he do from there? 19, keep reading. When David had fled and made his escape, he went to Samuel at Ramah and told him all that Saul had done to him. There he and Samuel went to Noah and stayed there. And word came to Saul, David is at Noah in Ramah. So he sent men to capture him. When they saw a group of prophets prophesying, they get into that, and Saul again has his mind changed. But the point is, David went to a place to sort of hide, and the people sort of, as we'd say today, in this land, they ratted him out. Hey, go tell him. David's here. Skip down to chapter 20, verse 1. Then David fled from north at Ramah and went to Jonathan and asked, what have I done? What's my crime? How have I wronged your father that he's trying to take my life? Never, Jonathan replied, you're not going to die. Look, my father doesn't do anything great or small without confiding in me. Why would he hide this from me? It's not so. But David took an oath and said, your father knows very well that I've found favor in your eyes. And he said to himself, Jonathan must not know this or he would be grieved. Yet as surely as the Lord lives and as you live, there is only a step between me and death. Look at that. Yet as surely as the Lord lives, as you live, there is only a step between me and death. So Jonathan said to David, whatever you want me to do, I'll do for you. He just now said, I believe you. So they go through this, and you can read it in the next few verses here, that David's in a way, he's almost lost his life. He's now got his wife, is sort of like saying, he tried to kill me, or he was going to kill me if I hadn't left. Now he goes into this next area, and the community rats him out and says, David's here, so I'll come kill him. Thanks, I lost my friends. David loses his best friend right here. Now some of you have lost your best friend to death, or to cancer. Some of you have lost your best friend in high school and say they died in a car crash. And it's tough when this is a guy that knows more about me than anybody else in the world. David would say that to Jonathan. And Jonathan says, David, they meet together, and at the end of it, they come up with this little thing. Jonathan says, I'm going to shoot an arrow. If I shoot it close, and that means Saul's okay. If I shoot it real far, you mean you got to go. And he comes out the next day, and he does. He shoots arrows real far. And then the little attendant there takes off, and he goes down to meet David. He says, David, you got the ring. Why? Because you're going to die if you stay here. You know what David could have said? Well, you're my best friend. What could you do? Won't you come with me? James, he can't leave his father because his father is what? Crazy. Can I leave the kingdom in the hands of someone who can flip-flop? I better stay here to make sure that my dad just doesn't go crazy. So, David, I got to leave and I got to say so long to you. So, let's see. David's almost lose his life, lose his wife, lose his friends, lose his best friend. And you say, okay, so David's on the run. David is on the run. He takes off. And he has a few people that might try to help him from here to there. And this is how bad it gets for David. You ever have a time in your life you say, I'm about to go crazy? Not that you've ever said that. My mama used to tell me that. Well, five boys would drive her crazy. My name was okay. She didn't drive her crazy. But us five boys did. And Mama, I can still remember Mama saying, can y'all just give me 5 minutes of what?
Peace.
I said, well, we can. I'll kill Lanny. And that way, no, I didn't say that. Can y'all just give me 5 minutes of peace? Sure. Well, 5 minutes of peace. Can you just give me this? Well, David is about to go crazy. Look at chapter 21, verse 1. David went to Nob, to Amalek, the priest. And Amalek trembled when he met him and said, oh, no, why are you alone? Why is no one with you? In other words, I thought you'd bring some soldiers. David meets the priest, and he's almost like, can you give me some help? And you know what? Even the priest can't help him. Wow, let's see. I've lost my, almost lose my life, lost my wife, lost my friends, lost Jonathan, and now I can't even get help from the church. The priest is running for me. David answered to Amalek, the priest, the king charged me with a certain matter and said to me, no one is to know anything about your mission, your instructions. As for my men, I've told them to meet me at a certain place. Now then, what do you have on hand? My men and I, my little band of merry men here are hungry. What have you got? He says, well, all I've got is the showbread. You can't eat that. That'd be another word for showbread. That's communion bread. And, of course, the Jewish law, you're not supposed to eat communion bread. That's only for what? Communion. David says, we're hungry. Guess what? Bring the bread out. Was that a disrespect? Let me ask you, you don't have to turn to it. Over in the New Testament, Jesus said his disciples were walking through a cornfield, grain field one day. His disciples were hungry. They stripped the grain and started eating it. They got in trouble for that. Who got them in trouble? Pharisees. Your disciples are eating grain. They're even shucking the corn there. They're doing work on the Sabbath. You can't do that. Right, Jesus, we just look at the Pharisees. You're missing the whole point, guys. It's not. He says the Sabbath was man-made for the Sabbath, or the Sabbath for God. You know, I made the Sabbath for man. I'm in control of the Sabbath. If they're hungry, it's okay. I think he would say the same thing to David. David, if you're hungry. So they eat grain. Here's David eats the showbread. Well, verse 4, the priest answered David, I don't have any ordinary bread on hand. However, there's some consecrated bread here. Provided the men, they've kept themselves from women. In other words, that's the old Jewish thing. Cannot have sexual relations for a certain amount of time. You cannot be impure. David replied, indeed, women have been kept from us. Hey, it's like we're doing a well just to find a creek to jump in for a bath. We're stinky, we're smelly, we're on the run. What do you think? Yeah, women are going to flock to us. As usual, wherever I set out, the men's things are holy, even on the missions that they're not holy. How much more so today? So the priest gave him the consecrated bread, and since there was no bread there except for the bread of the presence that had been removed from before the Lord and replaced by hot bread on the day it was taken away. So it was constantly being changed. Now one of Saul's servants was there that day, detained for the Lord. He was Doeg the Edomite, Saul's head shepherd. David asked him, like, why? Don't you have a spear or sword here? He says, why? Watch what he gives him as a weapon. I haven't brought my sword or any other weapon because the king's business was urgent. The priest replied, well, the sword of Goliath, the Philistine, whom you killed in the Valley of Elah, is here. It's wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If you want to take it, there's no sword here but that one. David says, there's none like it. Give it to me. I feel like he almost deserved that. That day David fled from Saul and went to Achish, king of Gath. But the servants of Achish said to him, isn't this David, the king of the land? Isn't he the one they sing about in the dances? Saul has slain his thousands, David his 10,000s. So David took these words to heart and was very much afraid of Achish, king of Gath. In other words, if they know who I am, they're going to kill me. So I've got to come up with a plan. Quick, what's my plan? Boom, next verse. So he pretended, it was a ruse. So he feigned insanity in his presence. While he was there in their hands, he acted like a madman, making marks on the doors of the gate, letting saliva run down his beard. He acted like he was crazy. Achish said to his servants, look at the man. He's insane. Why bring him to me? Am I so short of madmen that you have to bring this fella here to carry on like this in front of me? Must this man come into my house? In other words, just get rid of him. Chapter 22, David left Gath and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And that's that cave that I showed you about just a minute ago with the X. If David hadn't acted crazy, they'd have killed him. As it was, the king's like, this guy's a threat to me. He's a threat to me. Get him out of here. David walks out, stops, wipes a spit from his beard, and goes, that was close. Pretty smart. So David goes crazy before others. And David escapes and lives in the cave. Now he's at the cave. Why do you think David's desperate, discouraged? I don't want you to raise your hand, but you're David right now. I don't know what cave you're living in, but we've all lived in a cave, haven't we? My daddy and mama are gone. This is wrong. My brother was this, or my dad, or no friends, no this, no that. I am what? All? And it's about that time, promise comes through, just like this, and God says, you're not alone. Because I've promised you, and I'm good for my word, I will never leave you nor forsake you. So you either believe me, David, or you don't. And yes, you're living in a cave, and right now you don't have a whole lot of people around you, but maybe I've done all this to get you by yourself so I can really just hammer you a little bit and get in close. There's even a saying that's not even biblical that people of the world say. It's always darkest before the dawn. David hadn't seen the dawn for a while. Slobber in his beard, dirt caked all over him. And he comes down running through the hills and comes into a cave there at Adullam. He's in that cave and the Dead Sea is before him. And God moves him and he says, David, I know you have no wife, no friends, no anything. And I know you're all by yourself. But you're not by yourself. Because I'm with you. God, how can you make sense of this? How can you? And God, in his infinite wisdom, or maybe a touch of humor, where is he going to meet him at? At the lowest point in his life, and also at the lowest place on the earth. You know what David might say? Things can't get no worse than this, God. It's got to go up. He said, you lonely? Yes, sir. Would you like some people to keep you company? I feel like I'm on the desert island right now. Good, I'm going to give you some people. Chapter 22, David left Gath, escaped to the cave of Adullam. When his brothers and his father's household heard about it, they went down to him there. I don't know how long he's prayed by himself in the cave. All those, look at this now. God's got this sense of humor. You want some company? I'm going to send you some people.
Yes.
All those who were in distress or in debt or discontented gathered around him. Thank you, God. Give me people. These are a bunch of losers. God was just saying to David, you know what? In some people's eyes, so are you. But you're not a loser, David. You are actually a winner. And I'm putting people around you that are discontented, doesn't have a lot of friends of their own, and I want you to be a leader of them. And they'll say, no more. They would never say, now, if David was in the palace and David says, I can identify with you guys, they would say, yeah, right, you live in a palace and have everything. He tells them that now. I can identify with you guys. You know what? You can.
Yeah.
I've been being chased. Look at there, brother. I'm being chased by the King Saul. He'll kill me. Where's your wife? Don't know. Where's your friends? Don't know. You got a best friend?
Used to.
Man, dude, you're just like me.
Would you be our leader?
He's the leader of a bunch of what? He's a leader of a bunch of what?
Losers.
But you know what?
God hadn't put him at the lowest point in his life to say, David, you're still a commander, you're still a leader, and I want you to run, take this group.
Well, how many people? Just a few?
Well, let's see. A bunch of people gathered around him, and he became their leader.
Okay.
Look how many there is. 400.
400 men were with him. And from there, David went to Mizpah and Moab and said to the king of Moab, would you let my father and mother come and stay with you until I learn what God will do for me? Took care of his family. So he left them with the king of Moab, and they stayed with him as long as David was in the stronghold. David's a hero right there. He's saying, hey, it's me you want, not my family. Don't kill my mom and dad. If you want to kill me, you come after me, Saul. But the prophet of Gad said to David, do not stay in the stronghold. Go into the land of Judah. So David left and went to the forest of Herath. Now, got a question for you. The bad news is this. He has no place in the court. He's no longer a part of royalty. No position in the army. No wife. No priest. No friends. No best friend. No nothing. But here, he's got this good news. David made some new friends, became a leader, followed God better, and he's dependent on God more than he ever has because he took him at his word and said, maybe there's something to this thing of God being my refuge. Would you look at Psalms 57, and Psalmist David wrote this, and here's what his attitude went from, I'm dogged, I'm about half dead, I just feel like giving up, and God impressed him on, I will never leave you nor forsake you. And so David pens these words in Psalm 57. If you look at the top of the psalm, it says, for the record of music to the tune of Do Not Destroy. When he had fled from Saul into the cave, David, as he's sitting in that cave, he has some soul searching, and I haven't painted the better picture. I don't know how long he stayed in this position of being paid. I don't know. Is there any use in coming home? Is there any use in trying? And God speaks to him, and he writes these. You know, like David, don't give up. I've got plans for you. And so David prays this in response. Have mercy on me, O God. Have mercy on me. For in you my soul takes what word? Refuge. He uses refuge over 45 times, I believe, in the psalm. He must have liked that word. I will take refuge in the shadow of your wings. I love that. Just picture God flying over you and right here you are, the shadow of the wings. Until the disaster is past. What did he just now promise David? You won't die in this cave. And you won't die until you're an old man. No one's going to spare you. I'm going to pass this disaster over you. I cry out to God Most High, to God who fulfills his promise for me. He sends from heaven and saves me, rebuking those who hotly pursue me. God sends his love and his faithfulness. I will never leave you nor forsake you. I'm in the midst of lions. I lie among ravenous beasts, men whose teeth are spears and arrows, whose tongues are sharp words. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth. They spread a net for my feet. I was bowed down in distress. They dug a pit for my path. They have fallen into it themselves. My heart is steadfast, O God. My heart is steadfast. I will sing and make music. Awake my soul. Awake harp and lyre. I will awaken the dawn. I will praise you, O Lord, among the nations. I will sing of you among the peoples. For great is your love, reaching to the heavens. Your faithfulness reaches to the skies. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth. It's not often easy when you have to go through that. Max Lucado writes a story about Whit Griswold. This Kentucky native was raised in a Christian home, but as a young man, he served as an officer in a Christian church, but he fell into gambling, daily risking his income on baseball games. He lost more than he won, and he found himself in a desperate debt to his bookie. He decided to embezzle funds from the bank where he worked to make everything right. Welcome to Gath. It was only a matter of time until the auditors detected a problem and called for an appointment. Griswold knew he had been caught. And the night before the examination, he couldn't sleep and he couldn't face the music, and he was going to end it all. Can you guess what he decided to do? The night before the examination, he couldn't sleep. He resolved to take the path of Judas. Leaving his wife a suicide note, he drove outside of Lexington, Kentucky, parked the car, and put a gun to his head. He got a good breath, but couldn't pull the trigger. So he took a practice shot out the window. Now I'm ready. He pressed the nose of the barrel again toward his head and mumbled, "Go ahead and pull the trigger, you no good slob. This is what you deserve." What would we be telling him to do that? Satan. Yeah, when you're down, here's what the devil does when you're down. But he couldn't do it again. The fear that he might go to hell kept him from pulling the gun. Pulling the trigger of the gun, taking his own life. Finally, at dawn, he went home a broken man, ready to face things. His wife had found the note and called the police. As he came through the door, she didn't fuss at him. She embraced him. The officers handcuffed him and led him away. He was at once humiliated, but he was also liberated. Humiliated to be arrested in front of his family and friends, but liberated from the chains of mistruth. He didn't have to lie anymore. Whit Griswold's Adullam, that cave that David was in, was his prison cell. In it, he came to his senses. He turned to the Lord, back to his faith. Upon release, he plunged into the work of the local church, doing whatever needed to be done. And he wrote this down. He said, "You'll never know that Jesus is all you need until Jesus is all you have." So over a period of years, he was added to the staff of the congregation of the church. In 1998, another area church asked him to serve as their senior minister. And at this writing, that church is one of Kentucky's fastest growing congregations. Walt Griswold was restored. He found comfort in the fact that God said, "I'll never leave you nor forsake you." I don't know where you are in your life, but maybe you're still in the cave. But this is a promise you can bank on. "I'll never leave you nor forsake you." We go on different paths, you and I, but we all had a point to where we just finally have to stop in a cave, maybe, or in a bedroom, or wherever we are, and say, "God, you haven't left me. I've just sensed you distance, but you're not. You're right there. So I'm time to come home like a little bristle." So pray with me. Dear Jesus, today some of us have maybe distanced ourselves from you. We feel like we don't deserve your closeness or your love. And Lord, that's a lie that the devil whispers to us. May we not listen to that. May we listen instead to the voice of truth that says, "I love you." Jesus, you love us so much you'd die for us, and you did die for us. Lord, thanks for the reminder today that when we feel our lowest, you're right there. The book of Romans tells us that we can't go to where you're not already there, whether it's height or depth. Or wherever on this planet we go, you're there. And Jesus, today, may some of us come out of the cave of Adullam, so to speak, or Adullam, and say, "Lord, I don't want to be sitting here waiting on my life to end when you've got so much ready for me." And so, Jesus, you spoke to David, and he was a leader, so you gave him people to lead. Not exactly who he thought he would lead, but, Lord, you got him going again. And this man who was in that cave would months and months later be the king of Israel. The Bible says that David was a man after your own heart. And later, even when the nations of Israel would go through tough times, God, you withheld punishment often because of your servant David. His effect was felt hundreds of years later. So Jesus, thank you that we get this story today, that no matter how low we have went, your arm is not too short to reach us, your eye is not too dim to see us, and your arms aren't folded that they can't hold us. So Jesus, today, would you come visit us right here, speak to the heart that feels that they're distant, and Lord, draw them close to you. So with our heads bowed and our eyes closed, I want you to pause for a minute. Thank you.